Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Story Archives. I'm your host, Mario Busto, and welcome to this Solo Dolo episode. We're going to be covering Tokyo Vice Season 1. This is going to be a Season 1 review pod. I don't even know if many of you out there have actually even heard of this show, but we do get a lot of emails, and we get some members of the audience who have said, you know, hey, thanks for, you know, giving me a tip on that show. I didn't know about it. I watched it. I loved it. Now I subscribe to that streamer, and now we're watching it at home, blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of, that was part of the vision for Story Archives, was not that we were going to cover the most shows, but there were going to be shows that we enjoyed. And by covering shows that we enjoy, we knew that it would resonate with an audience out there that also liked the same types of shows. And Tokyo Vice definitely fits the bill there. I was doing a little bit of research because I got distracted on my coverage for Tokyo Vice. I had been planning on doing a season one sort of review, recap type of thing for over a month now, probably, and got distracted. We did a series on Constellation, Masters of the Air, and those two are really our main focus for a little bit since pretty much the start of the year. And we just wrapped up both of those series. You can check those out if you haven't. You can go and do a binge now because both seasons are over. And now we're kind of in that in-between zone, right? We have this Tokyo Vice pod that I'm going to do solo. And we're also probably planning on starting a series on Three Body Problem on Netflix. We don't do a lot of Netflix shows. We've done one in the past, like Lupin. But, and Peaky Blinders. We've done that, even though that was a BBC original first. So, yeah, that will be one of the first Netflix shows in a while. So, but it does fit the bill for the type of thing we do on the channel. But this episode is going to be dedicated to Tokyo Vice. Not a lot of planning or preparation goes into these monologues other than the notes that I write. And this is just something that's kind of off the dome where I just give my thoughts, give my impressions and what I liked about the show. Usually not what I didn't like, because if I'm covering it, most of the time I'm pretty gung-ho about it, except for maybe little things like dumb moments in the show. For example, Jake Adelstein, who's our main protagonist, who's an American journalist, he comes over to Tokyo to be a crime reporter. There's one scene where he goes to a Yakuza crime scene, and literally you got a Yakuza member from Tozawa's gang. He's a thug. And Katagiri, Detective Katagiri, who he strikes up a partnership with or an alliance later on in the series, is pretty much de-escalating the situation in a way that will allow for, you know, peace to maintain between these two gangs. But Jake takes that moment to actually snap a photo, and the shutter is so loud in this quiet ass club that it was just ridiculous. It might be the most ridiculous moment in the entire series. But anyways, let's not deviate too far there. I recently just found out, as I was doing kind of a little bit of prep, I always like giving a little bit of kind of trivia info as I'm going to cover a show or give my thoughts on it. And I found out that Michael Mann is actually the executive producer, or one of the executive producers on Tokyo Vice. He actually directed the pilot. He doesn't have any more involvement as a director after that. He just recently did Ferrari with, what's his face, Adam Driver. And that was pretty good. So if you like Michael Mann, Heat, Miami Vice, all those things, you can kind of get the vibe, you know, that underworld, that kind of grimy underworld, but stylish, like with that perfect Michael Mann style that, you know, if you love it, you just love it. And if you don't, then it's just probably the same for you. But he does glamorize in a way the kind of underworld, in a way that if you're a man and you love gang shows or whatever, like we love Peaky Blinders, Sopranos, any show related to like mafia type themes or stories is always going to be a soft spot. But so this one kind of hits that while giving you the investigative mystery journalism type of thing of that you'd get in some other shows. But let's get into it. This is going to be season one. It's going to be kind of high level, not going to be super diving into the weeds or whatever. But it's actually this started filming, I think, around COVID, and it does have kind of a cult following. I listened to a podcast by actually the Bill Simmons podcast, which is probably my favorite sports podcast, even though he's a diehard Boston guy and I'm a diehard Miami sports fan and we tend to hate each other's sports teams. He does tend to have really good taste in TV shows from what I've seen. So he was talking about how nobody is really talking about the show. So, hey, Bill, if you want to bring over Story Archives to the Ringer, we ain't complaining. We're covering essentially the premise of the show starts with, it's led by Ansel Elgort. They have a pretty great cast. It's led by Ansel Elgort and Ken Watanabe, starring as Jake Adelstein and Hiroto Katagiri. And these guys are pretty much, when you start the season, you're not exactly sure how their paths are going to cross or what's going to make their relationship special. But as it progresses, it becomes pretty clear. Ansel Elgort kind of put a ton of work. That's kind of the thing that gets lost when you're watching this series, is the fact that this guy didn't know Japanese before starting the series. And he, for months, was doing like 4-hour lessons of Japanese. I mean, Michael Mann even told him to do like 9 hours a day of studying, but I don't think he did that much. But he's pretty damn fluent in Japanese, at least from what I can tell. So much so that it took me a few episodes to realize, wait a minute, Ansel Elgort's speaking like fluent Japanese right now. And it's just, it feels natural. It doesn't feel forced. And it's just so well done. And you got to appreciate when somebody's taking the effort, time and effort to do that. And anyways, let's continue on. Jake is an American journalist. He comes from a family who kind of, we don't know the full details of the drama of his family. We know his sister has some sort of mental illness or something that I think she tried to take her own life. And so he's kind of escaping his own type of past as well, or maybe his responsibilities as a brother in his family. But he comes over to Tokyo. He gets hired by the Micho, which was one of the biggest newspapers in Tokyo, one of the biggest publications. And he gets put on the police beat. Mostly he's being put on cases that are not what he's hoping for. He's trying to get to like the big stories right off the bat, and he's quickly given a reality check by not only his editor Emmy, but also by the head honcho, who's kind of a douchebag, who kind of turns down all his stories and is the main kind of foil in the newspaper publication. He makes two friends while he's over there in the newspaper. And I'm blanking on their names right now, but they're kind of like his name is Trendy and Tintin and Trendy or something like that. And they kind of stand out as the comedy duo of like the keeping things sort of lighthearted while things are getting really dark as the show progresses. But Jake, this is the late 90s. It's like around 1999. And the Yakuza underbelly sort of getting really dark. You have the Jihad Akai, which has a control of Tokyo or a lot of portions of Tokyo. And you have this kind of, sort of younger upstart, our main antagonist of season one, Tozawa, who's coming in to try to take the territory of Ishida and Jihad Akai, who we see mainly through the eyes of Sato, who's played by Sho Kasamatsu. And he's sort of the kind of like our connection into Jihad Akai and why we see them as the good guy Yakuza gang, right? They're the ones who won't get into dealing hard drugs. They're the ones who are sort of on the, I guess if you can like put the crimes on a scale, they sort of take a less dark approach. They're kind of the Corleone family. They're the Corleone family of this story, where you have in The Godfather 1, you have the rival mobs like Tozawa teaming up against Vito Corleone, and they want to deal hard drugs, and the money's coming in that's just crazy. And he just does not want to put that filth on the streets. And so even though Vito is technically a bad guy, he's also kind of the good guy, which is, that's what Ishida is here. And I'd say Ishida is like Vito Corleone and Sato is like Michael Corleone, right? Because you have that moment, which had to have been inspired by the scene where Don Vito, they're trying to assassinate him in the hospital. So it's kind of like a different take on that scene where Michael shows up. And you got the Enzo the baker, or the florist, I forget what Enzo is. And they have to move Vito, his bed, to a different room before the assassins get there. It kind of feels like that, because Sato, after finding out that his big brother, or kind of like his big brother in entering Jihad Akai, the guy who recruited him pretty much, Kume, was actually a mole for the Tozawa gang. And he was pretty much trying to team up with Tozawa so he could take over Ishida's spot. And after Sato's put on the spot and told by Ishida to kill Kume, I think he's kind of had it up to here with the crime world, and he doesn't really have what it takes to make it until he goes to break that news to Ishida and finds that almost everybody's dead inside of this Yakuza compound. And he ends up pretty much reacting. I guess like it's in that moment he realized, you know, that he did have it inside him. And he does successfully fight off the rival assassins who are there to kill Ishida and wipe out the entire Jihadakai gang, which is sort of his groundbreaking moment in the season itself, right? You know, he's very interesting looking. He's kind of like the mysterious, brooding, shadow area good guy or bad guy, depending on how you look at it. But he has this love sort of triangle with Sam, who's another... Everybody has like this mysterious past on this show, right? And Sam works at the Onyx as one of these, I don't want to call her a prostitute because she's not really a prostitute. She's just kind of a, I forgot what they call it in Japan, but there's these bars where you pretty much pay women to talk to you pretty much. I've seen it like in a bunch of tourist videos where women, like, you literally just pay women to talk to you. Like, it's dudes who don't know how to talk to girls, and they go in there and it's pretty much just girls who are talking to them and I guess keeping them company. But she's not really going so far as to be a hooker. So until Matsuo comes to the table and we sort of find out more about Sam, that she's an ex-Mormon from Utah, supposedly, and she's stolen money from the church. I think she comes from probably like a wealthy Mormon family or something, because she has like this family signet. And it has a phrase on it or whatever, do the right thing. I forget what it was. But Matsuo's come over on commission by her father to find her and to bring her back to the family. And she's pretty much propositioned to have sex. He's like, all right, look, your father paid me an obscene amount of money to bring you back. But, you know, your price for your freedom will be to have sex a few times. And that doesn't end well for Matsuo because Sam sort of... So here's the thing with Sam. She has it for Sato, right? She gets it going with Sato. Has a sort of romantic fling with him. And his criminal connection and his criminal sort of behavior, she hates it until she needs a way to get out from underneath the situation with Matsuo, which leads to Sato bashing in his head pretty much and killing him. So we don't know what's going to come of that scenario, but the plot is thickening there because Sam's in the middle of opening up her own club. She saved up money for all these years, ends up using the money that she was going to use for the club to try to save her friend Paulina, who was taken, as we find out, by Tozawa, and is now she's actually being prostituted out to sleep with, I guess, powerful men, and they're using tapes to blackmail. Very sort of Jeffrey Epstein-like, right? They're using this ship called the Yoshino, and they're filming people like the Vice Minister of Japan doing things on the ship. So I guess Tozawa was using that as political clout or political blackmail to use so that he can continue to grow his criminal empire. And it seems like the elders of the Yakuza are actually on board with Tozawa, because even in the scene where Tozawa is apologizing for his assassination attempt on Ishida, it's pretty much shown like, hey, these guys are all in cahoots. They're trying to take out the Jihadakai. And it just doesn't work out for him for now, right? Because we find out a lot of things about Tozawa. We find out that he's sick. He has an illness that's pretty much going to kill him if he doesn't get it fixed, which is why he leaves to the U.S. in an emergency to get treated. I guess he's probably going to come back with some miracle treatment that he got healed with, but because the show is just not ready to lose him as a character, in my opinion. And I know this is loosely based on a true story. I don't know how much it's sticking to the true story or not, because I know Tozawa is not the name of the original Yakuza leader that this is based on, but the plot does thicken. And we do find out that the police sort of have this, if you want to compare this to the Middle East, where when Saddam Hussein was taken out, it created a power vacuum in the Middle East. And so now you had all these different competing rival extremist groups trying to fill the power vacuum. And one could argue that it's better to have somebody who's in charge of that so that there's at least some sort of order, because you're not going to get rid of all those groups. And there was actually a show called there was a show, man. What was the name of it? It was on FX. Tyrant, I think it was called. And it was a series about a guy who had a brother who was pretty much a tyrant over this area in the Middle East. And the brother who's like the good guy, kind of soft, he eventually ends up getting roped into this and ends up becoming the thing, I guess, that he was judging from the beginning. So the police's strategy here with the Yakuza is essentially to keep the peace with the gangs, rather, because they know they can't root them all out. So rather than trying to root them out, they just want to keep peace. So as long as there's not violence, they can kind of deal with it on a case-by-case basis, which we see that when Katagiri breaks up that near murder in the club that Jake takes his camera out and, you know, makes his shutter so loud in the place that everybody turns around and looks at him. But that's kind of what goes down there. As the season progresses, we find out about this scheme that Tozawa has where essentially they're giving loans to people that it's impossible for them to pay off. And they're pooling or they're creating life insurance policies on the people who take the loans. So, and then they're pressuring the people to pretty much kill themselves so that they can collect on the life insurance policy, which is a pretty nefarious and dark and twisted way of getting paid out pretty handsomely on a loan. But you find that to be the common thread between all these people who are dying, is that they were all part from this company that Jake later finds out is connected directly to Tozawa. And just as he's about to get some paperwork from the guy who's in charge of this whole loan company thing, Sugita is his name, he kills himself as well. So every moment you think Tozawa is about to get caught in this show, something fortunate happens for him. Similar to when Ishida asks for Jake's help and he needs to find who the mole is in his organization, which Jake helps him with the help of Katagiri to find out that it's Kume. And then Ishida gives him the tip about the drug shipment, right? But instead of being patient, Jake takes it to Miyamoto, who ends up being a corrupt cop, who's later killed by Tozawa because he finds out that he was going to turn on him. And Miyamoto gets ahead of it, right? So every time Tozawa was about to get caught, something turns in his favor, sort of serendipitously for him. And that's pretty much where we leave the season, right? Where you have Jake, who's made a name for himself as a criminal reporter. Katagiri has been threatened by Tozawa that if he continues to pursue him, that he'll kill his family. So that's kind of put him on a standstill. And mind you, I'm saying all this from the perspective of somebody who hasn't really begun season two yet. You have Emmy, who can relate to Jake because she is Korean and she came from Korea over to Japan. And if you know anything about the relationship between Koreans and Japanese people, watch a show called Pachinko on Apple TV. And you'll see that Koreans weren't treated, they weren't treated like citizens, so to speak. They were always kind of discriminated a little bit against. I mean, I'm speaking completely out of my ass on the situation. I'm basing it off of what I saw on that show. But similar to how Jake gets called a foreigner all the time, there's sort of that treatment going on there, I think, for Korean people, at least at the time. And or maybe more in the 80s and 70s. But anyways, she relates to Jake in some way, and he's kind of inspired her to kind of take this more risky approach as a journalist. And so the plot thickens where Jake is not only investigating this health insurance thing, but he uncovers this Yoshino ship that is in connection with Tozawa and in direct relation to Sam's friend Polina, who's gone missing, who hasn't been found yet. But they do uncover a video that, or it's actually dropped off to Jake, a video that shows Polina getting the crap beaten out of her, and it shows the vice minister of Japan. So there's all sorts of things that are going on here. Sam now is answering to Jihara Kai because she does not have the money to open her club. So now she's in the exact same situation that the Onyx was in, that she's going to have a business partner in Jihara Kai, which will probably eventually take over her club because she did not listen to Sato in that scenario. Sato is rising through the ranks as probably the future leader of Jihara Kai. and probably the most interesting character on the entire show. Katagiri's going to have to get re-inspired or maybe even take a more risky approach of pursuing Tozawa because now his family's at risk here in this situation. So that's where the season ends. And I really can't recommend it enough. I've put a few people onto this show so far and every single one of them has reached out and said, this show is incredible. You know, so without fail, it's definitely a show that's flown under the radar and a show that wouldn't have flown under the radar if we weren't in the middle of this streaming renaissance where every single streamer right now is just putting out banger after banger of TV shows and movies, but mainly TV shows. And it's funny, this podcast was supposed to be a TV and film podcast, but I'm more of a TV guy myself in terms, I watch films and watch a lot of films, but most of the great stuff coming out these days with frequency are television shows. And they give so much more time for character development and attachment to a story and diving deeper into world building. And this show, if you had probably released it in, I don't know, 2015, 2014, ends up being one of the biggest shows on HBO. But because it's released now and everybody's bouncing from streamer to streamer, nobody's watching cable anymore, it flies under the radar, even for somebody like me who pretty much started watching season one as season two was coming out. And this was a show that had been on my radar and I just completely forgot about it. So highly recommend it. Let me know what you think about it. You can always email us at contact@soapbox.house. I'm planning on doing a season two review / wrap up once I finish season two. I'm not really planning on doing this episodically unless maybe I get to the midway point of season two and I'm like, all right, let me just split this up a little bit. But let me know what you think. These solo episodes are always an interesting one, right? Because it's literally just me talking to myself, looking at myself. And there's nobody to bounce opinions off of. So it's straight off the dome, my thought process with it. If you like the idea of Tokyo and like late 90s Tokyo, because they do a good job of world building and setting the scene, the show really does get that great sort of, I don't know, Tokyo has like this magic to it of like Tokyo at night. And this show captures that very well in a way that's become very popular nowadays. So yeah, I can't recommend this one high enough. I don't think we've had a lot of shows cover the Yakuza. We've had plenty of shows cover the mob, plenty of shows covering gangs in the U.S., but we've never really had a show about Yakuza, not like this. And it mixes that facet of it. It's not just black and white, good guys and bad guys. It takes a kind of nuanced approach that is really well done. And I think you'll all be surprised with it. And I think you'll all be delighted to find out that you have season one and season two at your disposal to binge through at your discretion. So you'll be able to do that. Now you won't have to wait week to week like everyone else who was probably waiting a couple of years for season two to drop. And you can join me on this pod. If you haven't watched this show, maybe it's a little bit too late for me to say this, but damn it, I hope you had common sense. Join me on season two for that wrap up. And I hope you enjoy this pod whenever you guys get around to watching the entire season. So yeah, that's all I got for this one. A little bit of house cleaning for the podcast. We just finished our series on Constellation, which is streaming on Apple TV Plus, starring Noomi Rapace and several other great actors. That's like a mind-bending show. That one's a constant mystery the entire time. If you enjoyed, what's a show I can put in that category? I don't know, but Three Body Problem is going to probably be around in the same sort of field. With that one, if you like that, we also did Masters of the Air, which is based on the Bloody Hundred Air Squadron in World War II. That one stars Austin Butler, Callum Turner, Barry Keoghan, and many others. This is sort of like continuing that series, sort of continued Band of Brothers and the Pacific. It's another entry into that group by telling a different story of World War II. It even features the my God, what do you call those guys? The Tuskegee Airmen in the series as well. So if you're into World War II history and you want to check that out, that series is really well good as well. And we are also posting our Peaky Blinders series on YouTube. We're continuing to post those little by little. Zach, my co-host, who usually joins me on pods, is currently in the middle of a move. He has relocated, so he's still getting things up in order. And we're planning on recording Three Body Problem, hopefully. It still has to pass the pilot. I usually say these shows have to pass at least a 2 to 3 episode test before we determine whether they're good enough for an episodic. But too many people who I trust, whether they're celebrity voices or even personal people I know, have said the show is damn good. So I'm pretty sure it's going to pass the test. So thank you all for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the rest of the series. We also cover many other series like Foundation, Silo, Last of Us, Invasion, and more. So if you want to check out any series that you have not watched before, check those out. We got plenty more coming this year. The Bear Season 3 is coming out soon. I cannot wait for that. House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming this year. I'm expecting Severance Season 2 this year, and much more. So that's about it, y'all. Thanks for tuning in. Let me know what you thought about the episode. Contact at soapbox.house. Leave us a review. Rate the show 5 stars if you enjoyed it. Help us combat the bastards that leave us bad reviews for no reason. And that's it. Have a great weekend. Enjoy this pod. Stay safe. Peace.